You know their voices, even if you don't know their names. They are among the most famous voices in America, and they are part of a new book called Secrets of Voiceover Success. Let me tell you their name and then give you a little sample of their work. First up, Don LaFontaine.
DreamWorks Pictures invites you to a land of fairy tales, where an unlikely hero rescues a fair princess.
You didn't play the dragon?
It's on my to-do list.
From a nasty villain.
Eat me!
With the help of his trusty companion.
This is gonna be fun.
This summer, one name spells action. One name spells adventure. One name...
Don't look down.
...spells romance. And that name is...
Timothy Dalton is James Bond, 007.
Indiana Jones is on the quest of a lifetime. But for some adventures, one Jones is not enough.
Dad? Junior?
Don't call me that.
A race across three continents. Have the adventure of your life. Keeping up with the Joneses. Due to violent content, parental discretion is advised.
There's a sample of the voice of God, as he's known in the industry, Don LaFontaine. And also joining me here today on the show is Joe Cipriano, who is the voice of Fox and CBS comedies and at least a half a dozen award shows. Here's some of Joe's work.
They make America laugh.
Oh, yes.
Now celebrate the first 6 years of the smash hit comedy Everybody Loves Raymond with special guests Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, Martin Short, plus more.
Then, a CBS World premiere event. The dead are talking and one man is listening.
I see things and hear things.
But what they say...
We found six bodies.
...will lead him to try and solve an unspeakable crime.
Oh, my God.
Ted Danson, Living with the Dead, CBS Sunday.
Tonight on ABC Wednesday... Damon Wayans and his wife think their daughter is getting ready to go all the way with her boyfriend.
You know how it was when we were young.
Yeah, but you were easy.
What?
I mean, to love.
My wife and kids. Then, when George Lopez stands up for a co-worker.
Just because he's an Arab, you got a problem with him?
Even his mother is suspicious.
Am I the only one whose eyebrows are raised?
Yeah, because you pencil him in that way.
The competition begins tonight on ABC.
Joe Cipriano and Don LaFontaine are both in their individual studios out in Los Angeles and join us live here on the Paul Harris Show. Hi, guys.
Hey, hi, Paul.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
That was Joe.
While we were playing that, by the way, Joe was complaining that I went second with him. You should. Is the problem that you should never follow Don?
Never follow Don LaFontaine. I mean, even if you had a halfway decent voice, you end up sounding like this.
I pay him to do that.
Yeah. The book is called Secrets of Voiceover Success. Joan Baker, who's another voiceover talent, put this together and talked to these two guys and a bunch of other voiceover talents. And it's kind of an instruction booklet on how anybody who wanted to break into this business could break into this business. And Don, you've been doing it for more than four decades, right?
Yes, I have. About 42 years, but I started when I was two. My voice changed very, very early. And if you believe that, there's some property in Secaucus, New Jersey I'd like you to look at as soon as the water table gets a little lower.
Have you been doing it so long?
Yeah, I started in 63.
Have you been doing it so long that guys are now doing Don LaFontaine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Yes, I mean. I think they have nothing better to do. I don't know. I think what's happened is that because I've been around this particular thing for so long, that being the particular thing being promos for movies and for network shows, which are all written about the same way, and I helped write some of them originally, that I've been around for so long, and I was in on it from the very beginning in the early 60s when they started doing this, that some of the stuff that I've read has sort of become a way of reading it, because there's only a number of ways you can read this copy anyhow. So if they're imitating me, they're actually imitating me doing the obvious. So,
Joe,
you
actually,
I guess that's the way it works.
You wrote a lot of this stuff early on as well. So
yeah, guilty. But I've never been indicted. So.
Now, Joe, when you were starting out doing this, breaking out of radio and into the voiceover business, you actually faked your way into it, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I worked at a radio station, like you said, so I had a recording studio right there, and I would go into the studio at night, and I'd record fake commercials and make a demo and then send it out. You know, at the radio station, we would receive all these commercials coming in from different ad agencies and studios and all, and I thought, well, that's a good place to go to try to get work as a voiceover guy. So I do this fake tape of all these fake commercials that I voiced and sent it to them and said, here's what I sound like. And it actually worked. I did that in Washington, D.C., and also when we moved out here to L.A.
Now, you've been
Joey's
the voice
of the more inventive liars.
That's right.
Yes, he is. Now, Joe, you've been the voice of CBS comedies for 8 years and Fox stuff, I think, going back to Married with Children, which is like 15, 16 years, something like that.
Way back, yes, before Color.
Well, my question is, since you've been doing it so long and Don, since you've been doing it so long, do you guys have to audition anymore?
Don?
Not really. I do occasionally for something else, you know, for other products. But the problem with that is what happens many times is I will get the instruction will come along with a piece of copy. It'll say, a la Don LaFontaine.
Right, right.
It's a direction. Or you'll get one that says, a la Joe Cipriano. If that ever happens, Joe, do you ever get it?
Never.
No,
I
neither
never,
do I.
Never get it, no.
It's the kiss of death when somebody wants me to do me, so I can't do that.
Yeah. That's so true.
It's true. But occasionally, yeah. We'll still audition because we're, you know, basically very hungry.
How about you,
well,
sir?
And I audition. A lot more than Don does. I mean, Don just received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Key Arts people who give out awards every year for movie trailers. And Don was just awarded this incredible honor last week. And so, I mean, he is the Don. And the rest of us, you know, really, we all do what Don did last week and then hope that'll work out for us, you know.
Don, pay Joe to say that, too.
when you started doing these movie trailers in 1963, they weren't what they are today, right? I mean, you actually helped change the form.
I think so, yeah. Prior to that time, prior to the very early 60s, there was, of course, no advertising of movies on television. They were the big competitors, obviously. And most of the advertising was done by two ways, either print advertising or the trailers. Print advertising was pretty much cut and dried. They were sort of, you know, still pictures of what the trailers were. The trailers were usually cut as afterthoughts by the editors of the films themselves. They were finished by National Screen Service out here in Los Angeles with basically the same guy on them all the time. And they were pretty boring for the most part. And a lot of hyperbole and a lot of stars, you know, star-driven things and lots of splashy titles. And if everything else failed, they'd take Cecil B. DeMille, put him on a stool in front of a Klieg light someplace and have him say, you know, soprano voice, come and see my movie. In the 60s, the studios finally went on the outside to independent vendors, and I was fortunate enough to be one of those guys. And so we were there at the very outset, and since we didn't know there were rules to advertising, we just went about breaking them all and wrote this copy that would never have been accepted in any other format, any other style, selling anything else. You can't use this to sell soup. At least you couldn't then. Now you can, but of course you couldn't then. So, yeah, I was part of that group that did that.
And you do mostly movies, but also some TV. And, Joe, you do almost exclusively TV. Do either of you also do commercial work?
I really don't. I know Don has. Many times he'll do commercial work, Don, that's kind of like mocking a movie trailer as well, right?
Yeah, about 40 times a year, somebody in the advertising agency, I got a great idea. Let's sell this as if it was a movie trailer.
Right, right.
And we'll get that guy.
Yeah.
Actually, I do more network television now than I do movies. There's a current crop of guys that are doing mostly of the trailers now, and my hitmen have missed them so far, so I can't get them on the
Doggone
it.
Don is so in demand that he literally limos all over town to multiple sessions every day, and this time that he's spending here on the Paul Harris Show is costing him probably a five-figure check somewhere, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, you'll get my bill.
You'll get the bill.
Yeah, send it to Sip.
Yeah, right.
Actually, Paul, I don't do that anymore. I got rid of my limo a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Just like Joey. I work out of the house now. I don't even get dressed some days.
Oh, please, let's not go there.
Yeah, please, let's not.
What they're talking about
is vomiting.
What they're talking about is the miracle of ISDN technology, high-priced phone lines that they put in their home studios. And Sip, this has actually allowed you to do stuff from anywhere you want, right?
I have. I've done sessions from Florence, Italy, and Hawaii. Anywhere we go on vacation, and I put that in quotes. I'll usually do a session or two or a day, and I'll put an ISDN line in the hotel, or I'll find a studio in town and do my sessions. Not that I'll take up the whole day working, but I think it's important to, at least where I am, to try to keep the gig. I mean, I got the gig originally at Fox back in 1988. The network was only on for less than a year, But the poor guy before me who did my job went on vacation for 2 weeks, and they needed somebody to fill in. And they happened to hear me on the air as a DJ and said, you know, let's give this guy a shot. And in those 2 weeks, I ended up getting the job, and that was, what, 17 years ago or something.
See, that's
the
how
Joey fails to mention is that he got the job because he was good enough to do the job and keep the job. That was really the whole thing.
But that's also the basic, that's the basic insecurity of this business. You're afraid to go on vacation because somebody may come in and do the job, and now, you know, now Cipriano's got it for 17 years, and that guy, he's not anywhere anymore.
Well, it's a concern. I don't think Don worries about that, but, you know, I'm concerned about it, and probably most of the other guys, you know, that are out there. I mean, you've got to live your life. You've got to have a you know, why are you working if not to enjoy your life, enjoy your family?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Don, what was the first in a world? That's probably
you know,
the most famous line.
I really don't know. I know that it seems to have been with us forever and ever and ever. I think it might have been attached to something like the Carpetbaggers or the Prize. I mean, these are movies that were back out in the 60s,
wow.
In the early 60s where we were working on them. Maybe, you know, somewhere in there, it seems to me that's where they first came up. Yellow Rolls Royce could be it, too, actually. These are all very obscure movies.
They
are.
Very
huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very
wow.
Huge back in the early 60s.
But since then, you've said it 1,000 times.
Yeah, today.
Today.
In a world where a man is known for one phrase and has to say it over and over and over again, that's the Don LaFontaine
life.
I've
said before that that's when somebody wants to say, you know, trailer, in a world, they do that line and everybody breaks up and falls apart. Yet if you go to a theater and you're sitting there and a trailer comes on and it starts with, in a world, nobody breaks up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody laughs
mm-hmm.
because they're so preconditioned to understand that this is what is necessary to set up. You know, we only have 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes to tell you this basic story, and mm-hmm. we need to set the setting more or less. And so it's become very acceptable to say in a world and not have everybody go crack up outside of a theater. Or inside of a theater.
Don, you talked about how you used to have to write the copy when you were first creating this new art form of the modern trailer. Now you go in mm. and everything's written for you, and there's a producer and a director and an agency guy in the studio or they're on the headset talking back and forth with you while you're doing it from your home facility there. Everybody's got stories about dealing with these guys. How many times have you had to do way too many takes?
Not all that often, because fortunately, I'm, as is Joey, I'm hired to pretty much be me and to put my spin on the stuff. And as most of the guys that work a lot are, that's why we work a lot, is because we can be depended upon to bring whatever it is we bring to the copy consistently. So not too terribly often has that happened to me. The only problem that we run into every now and then, and I put this up in the book, as a matter of fact, is what I call the voiceover hell, which is where you get a producer who can't believe that you actually got it in the first or second take.
Right.
Yeah.
And now starts chasing it. And 35 takes later, he's trying to get what he heard the first or second time, and he's taking you further and further away from
right.
it.
Right.
And so what happens is that he's unhappy, you're a very difficult person to work with, and you never hear from him again. So.
Yeah.
And you know, it's always the kiss of death. The more people that are in the room, the decision makers, that means the session is going to go terribly wrong, because you do your first take, and then they all look at one another. And it's, what did you think? Well, what do you think? Well, what do you think? And
that's the perfect definition of the camel.
I have not done a lot of voiceover work, but I've done a little bit here and there outside of my radio work. And I can remember one session myself where I went in, did the thing, got it right the first time. I was in there 5 minutes, and you could tell that most of the people in the room were happy. But one person said, we paid him a lot of money to come in here, and he's only going to work 5 minutes?
Right.
Yeah.
Make them do it again. Make them do it again. Make them do it again.
It is silly, because that's why they're paying you the money that they're paying you, so that you'll get in there and do exactly what they want and get out.
Yeah. So now they've gotten the pound of flesh out of you that they wanted, and now they're making their editor work about five times as long, weeding through all the stuff that they made you say.
Right. Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Plus, you have to stay an extra couple hours because, you know, you want to take advantage of the lunch that comes to the studio as well.
Yeah.
And then
margaritas at 5.
Then they go and use take one anyway.
Right.
Sure. Of course.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk with Don LaFontaine and Joe Cipriano, two of the best in the voiceover business. The book is called Secrets of Voiceover Success. Joan Baker, another voiceover artist, put this together with these two guys and a bunch of others. And Joe, the royalties are going to Alzheimer's Research, is that right?
Alzheimer's Research, all the proceeds, all of Joan's, all the money that comes in goes 100% to Alzheimer's Research, which brought, I think, both Don and I to the project.
Yes, indeed.
It's really, really for a great cause.
There is a link to the book on my website, harrisonline.com. We'll come back and talk some more with these guys. The Paul Harris Show continues in a moment on KMOX. Talking with two of the most famous voices in America, Don LaFontaine, whose voice has been on 4,000 movie trailers, tens of thousands of television promos, and Joe Cipriano, who's been the promo voice of the Fox comedies on TV for 17 years and the CBS comedies for 8 years, and he's done live announcing work at the Grammy Awards and the VH1 Awards and the GQ Magazine Men of the Year Awards, and the one that I think every voiceover guy really wants, the Blockbuster Entertainment Awards. There's the big one right there, huh?
Really? I've done all of that? Where'd the money go? Where did the money go?
You said you were married.
He has children.
That's true.
Married with children.
Married with children. There it is.
Let's talk a little bit about the book, Secrets of Voiceover Success. If somebody wants to get into your business, should they quit their job, move to L.A., and just try to crack the business?
You know, it's so funny. I get that so often, many times from radio people who send me an email right after they've just gotten fired. From a radio station, and they'll say, you know, now that I'm out of work, I'm ready to start that voiceover career now. Maybe not the best time to do it. I mean, I've always said you got to keep your day job and, you know, use the off hours from that to pursue your voiceover career.
Yeah, and you have to be very dedicated, and you have to stay with it for a long, long time, unless you're extremely lucky. And even at that, it's still not going to be something that happens overnight, because it takes a while for everybody to get used to you being around.
Do you have to have a deep voice like yours, Don?
No.
No.
Joe's a perfect case in point. And that's, I don't mean to slam Joe because he sounds like a girly man.
But there's a place for that in voiceover.
There's a place.
Yes.
Joe can do stuff that I cannot do because he has that, you know, he's a far
like
more
fit into small
sound.
Spaces.
Yes.
No, I don't know.
No, there's virtually work for virtually every single voice. Mm-hmm. There really is. It just, you know, in some voices you're so specific that the amount of work you're going to get is going to be minimal. But virtually anybody can do this. Even if you have an impediment, you can do it. It's not really something that you should try and make a big career out of if you have anything seriously wrong with your voice. But you can work in this area. It's just a matter of dedicating yourself to knowing how to do it. It's how you read, how you express yourself.
One of the things I've always liked about you, Joe, is something I always admired about the legendary Ernie Anderson, which is your ability to do a promo for a comedy and then go right into a promo for a really in-depth news story or an action-packed drama or a weepy movie of the week. You know, you go from that that kind of laughing tone into, now we're going to get serious.
Yes, they call that two-faced, I think, Paul.
Yeah.
Yes. No, but, you know, and many times, and the way we work in promo for network promo is the promo itself, whether it's whatever the length, if it's 30 seconds, it's been cut and approved, and everything's in it. The music is in it, the sound on tape, the SOTs, which would be the characters from the show. Everything's in place, and you have a script, and you are actually reading in between all of the dialogue from the show and the way it's been cut together. And you do it in one pass. You start at the beginning, and it starts off with Monday on an all-new, and you go right on down. And then halfway through, it may change to then. It's an all, you know.
Right.
And you have to do your drama thing. And so you are doing it on the fly many times.
But you're doing it with those other elements in there? You're not doing it separately and then having it edited all together?
No.
It's all together.
Yeah, for network promo, everything is there. And I think in most situations like that, everything is pre-produced and ready. The voice is almost the last thing to go in.
And Don,
it helps if you have a mild case of schizophrenia.
And Don, for your thousands of movie promos, how many of them do you have a visual idea of what it's going to be before you do them, and how many of the movies do you actually then go see?
Well, I go see a few. I don't have any visual idea for most pictures unless I, you know, have some familiarity with the story itself. I'm at the place now in my career where I'm actually getting stuff the second time around, like the Thomas Crown Affair and Longest Yard and Bad News Bears.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, these pictures all came out the first time around when I was in this business, and now they're coming back, you know, like, look, these golden oldies. But when I was cutting them, obviously, I used to be able to see the, you know, when I was writing, I used to see the movies, you know, beforehand, in a, usually in a very rough black and white format or something like that. But nowadays, no, I don't see them at all.
What do you?
And if I go see them.
What do you think of the trend of more well-known actors? I mean, you guys are voice actors, but I'm talking about, you know, Gene Hackman or Glenn Close or Richard Dreyfuss becoming the voice of car companies and all this sort of thing. Do you feel like, hey, get out of my business?
No. I mean, there are other, you know, believe it or not, Joey and I are actors. And so we're all in the same business, really. And it's, you know, it's okay because it's going to happen regardless. It's mm-hmm. a very natural thing for advertisers to say, hey, let's get somebody, you know, with a big name. The irony is I don't know how often they're actually recognized. I don't know how much of star value they actually have because they're very, very good at what they do. And any good actor can disappear into his role. Mm-hmm. And if they're selling you a car, you're not – they're so far out of context. The idea of Harrison Ford selling me a car mm-hmm. is so far out of context that you don't even consider it. So you don't, you know, necessarily recognize their voice.
Yeah, I hardly ever pick up on it, really, unless it's very specific. But I'm many times surprised when they say, you know, that was – you know, so-and-so, Sylvester Stallone. You're kidding me. Really?
Yeah. Probably better that you don't know who it is. Otherwise, then they're not doing their job selling what the product is supposed to be.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if that's the case, if it doesn't make any difference one way or the other, I don't know why the advertisers are paying these huge premiums.
Right.
I have nothing against it. You know, you can have them. If you can get somebody to pay you a couple of $1 million to do that stuff, that's fine and dandy as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why they're doing that unless it's for the star quality. You know, the whole idea of doing something. That sounds like you got a big star. James Earl Jones is, of course, the perfect example of someone who's instantly identifiable because of, you know, the way he sounds. And there's a few others, like Peter Coyote, but I don't know how many people actually know that. But, you know, Joe and I would recognize Peter Coyote certainly very quickly because he's very distinctive.
Mm-hmm. Don, true or false?
The other guys.
True or false, Don, somebody once told you, you'll never make it in voiceovers.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I had been... doing a lot of stuff for movies for about 5 or 6 years, actually. This is back in New York. And I decided, well, since I've been doing this and I've got some tapes on myself, maybe I can try and, you know, break into the commercial end of the thing. So I sent a tape off to one of the larger agencies. I won't mention their name. And I received a letter back from the head of that agency saying, don't waste my time and don't waste your time. You'll never make it in voiceover. Fortunately, I was too busy working in voiceover to pay much attention to that.
You know, so. Interestingly enough, Paul, I hear that almost every day. In fact, Don mentioned it to me just before we got together.
Why are you still persisting?
Yeah. Maybe they're related to the same guy who told me in 1984, you'll never make any money in radio. Okay,
there
good call.
Go.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. That's usually something to really look forward to. Say, please hope somebody tells you you can't do this because obviously you can.
Have either of you wanted to do voice work in animated movies, Shrek or Toy Story, you know, the Pixar stuff, any of that?
I would love to do that at some point.
I think it would be amazing. You know, they do that, and it's a very ensemble sort of atmosphere. You know, everyone's together, and it's really like doing a radio play, I think. I think that would be quite fun. But, you know, again, now any animation that comes out, certainly feature stuff, is populated by voices of really megastars, you know, that are doing it. There's not a lot of...
Actually, I got to take issue with that, Joey. In many cases, a lot of the Disney stuff, these actors are working all by themselves. They're not working against anybody.
Really? Not in an ensemble thing?
Hmm. No.
You mean they're in the studio just in front of a microphone and they're not acting with the other person?
Yeah, usually what they're in the studio, they have a headset on, and they're saying their lines, and they will have a producer or somebody, you know, on headset feeding them the other lines.
Yeah.
And they are reacting to them, and they'll do that, you know, maybe they'll do that one reaction
you're right.
64 times.
In the feature stuff, they do that, yeah.
They just pick out what they like.
With The Simpsons, they're together, and some of the TV animation.
Yeah, the TV stuff is generally done as an ensemble because you need that immediacy, but...
There's a gig, Paul.
With the big films.
Be one of the Simpson voices. That's not so bad.
Yeah, except that Hank Azaria is all of them now.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, he is.
Do you guys ever get copy emailed to you? You know, you're sitting in your home studio and you look down and go, boy, I am not right for this, but what the heck?
As a gig, you mean? Or as an audition? Wow. I don't know. I think that for me, anyhow, I pretty much get copy that matches what I do. Certainly on auditions, you'll be able to stretch and try different things. But I think people you know, that are doing the hiring know pretty much what you can do, and they know to go after, you know, whatever talent's going to be able to do the best job.
All right, let's get back
to... The problem
with
that sometimes is...
No, go ahead, Don.
The problem with that sometimes is that people get tended to be put into a box, like
right.
Joe.
Right.
You know, Joe makes a lot of jokes about being, you know, this high-pitched voice and all stuff, which, as you heard, he's perfectly capable of doing drama and doing it very, very well.
Yep.
But they don't call on him to do it often enough or really ever, except mm-hmm. in the context of, you know, having to split a spot up.
Right.
And I think they're missing a bet because he's, you know, definitely got a lot more depth than... and I'm not making a joke about the depth of your voice, mm-hmm. A lot more depth in his performance ability than is being exploited at this time. But hopefully, you know, it'll
yeah.
work.
Yeah, you never know. There's always something new around the corner. You know, you may get on something and they'll go, wow, you're kidding. That's Joe or that's Bob or, you know, I'm amazed, you know.
Yeah.
So if you get to show off a little bit, well...
Let's talk a little bit more about tips for people who may want to get into this business. You said keep your day job while trying to do it.
yes.
What else do they need to know? Do you need an agent?
Well, if you're going to go after the kind of work that that we do, and that would be union work, we're members of AFTRA, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, and also Screen Actors Guild. And you need to have, in the major markets in New York and L.A. and Chicago, you need to have an agent. I almost think that a lot of the buyers, the people who go out looking for talent, they almost think maybe you're not good enough if you don't have an agent. So you have to kind of conform to that. For doing other types of work, if you're doing do local radio and local TV, it's not necessary. What do you think, Don?
That's true. And you know, it's that old catch-22. You can't get work without an agent. You can't get an agent without work. And that's the problem that a lot of people have. And a lot of people have to come in sort of through the back door, which with this ISDN lines, like as Joe and I have now, you're no longer stuck with having to be in one of the major areas like Los Angeles or New York or Chicago. You can virtually be anywhere in the country and get your wares out there. So some people who hook themselves up that way and manage to keep body and soul together with some other employment can make tapes and, you know, get themselves out to the smaller stations and hope to start building up a clientele. And eventually, once you have the clientele, then you have agents lining up because they want a piece of that action.
Right.
So it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the way things are going because of ISDN, now an agent, you know, it used to be an agent in Los Angeles would really concentrate on the L.A. area. And maybe a New York agent would concentrate on New York. Now your agent has to concentrate on jobs really coast to coast, all over the country. Or all around the world because of the proliferation of ISDN. Now Don can do a job in New York at 9 a.m. and at 9:15 do a job in Chicago and at 9:30 do a job in Los Angeles. I mean, that was unheard of before. It was almost impossible.
Well, we don't want to give away all the secrets because we want people to buy the book. Joan Baker put this book together called Secrets of Voiceover Success. You learn about Joe Cipriano and Don LaFontaine and their tips, and there's another dozen or so voiceover artists. These are the best people in the business who Joan has talked to, and she herself is one of them. Why aren't there more women doing this, by the way?
God knows.
Yes.
It's a mystery that neither Joey or I can answer because it's the only thing I can tell you is that in regards to movies, many times what happens since putting these things out now is such a major expense and there's a lot of money goes into the marketing of these films, a lot of money goes into focus groups. They want to know what audiences are going to buy, so they will put together a bunch of approaches to advertising and show them to these focus groups. And many times when they've taken and put a woman on the trailers, this is what I've heard in films that are very obvious, you know, the films that a lot of women like to go to see, the Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail, the How to Make an American Quilt, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of times it is the women in the focus groups who say no, more willing to listen to the guy say something than a woman saying something.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's preconditioning or not, because there are some tremendously talented women out here in across the country that really do deserve a chance at doing this.
And, so, you know,
I'm at a loss.
Yeah,
I don't know why they don't use it.
There's stereotyping as well. I mean, it's for forever, it seems. Back to the golden days of radio, it was always a deep-voiced, rich male voice. that would command attention. And it's
and how
old...
did you get into business again?
That's exactly right.
I knew there was another shot coming. I knew it.
I'm sorry. It was just too easy.
The book is called The Secrets of VoiceOver Success. Joan Baker put it together. The royalties go to Alzheimer's Research. You can also find these guys online at joecipriano.com and donlafontaine.com. It's a great pleasure having you both on here. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Joe Cipriano and Don LaFontaine here on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.